Greg Wyshynski is editor of the Puck Daddy blog and Yahoo Sports. He's also co-host of our Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, and he absolutely ripped Team USA a new one on Yahoo Sports. So basically, you're saying that they should just overhaul the entire thing, correct?
Yeah, and I think the 3 minutes that you've spent being interested in Team USA are more than they spent being interested in that Canada game after going down 3-1 last night, first of all.
They did quit. There was a remarkable willingness to quit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were, I hope ESPN was happy with the ratings for what amounted to the United States taking lackadaisical shots on goal and the Canadians poking a carcass with a stick for like 40 minutes. But no, listen, here's the thing. The future's bright. I mean, you can look at Team North America, to whom I've pledged my allegiance now, and see Austin Matthews and see Jack Eichel and see Brandon Saad and see Shane Gostisbehere and see Hellebuyck and Gibson. And you know people are on the way. It helps on the way, especially offensively. But the real issue is, are we going to go in that direction? Are we going to lean into the curve? Are we going to be a team of skill and speed? Or are we going to stay on the course that we've been on for the last 6 years, which is to build a quote unquote gritty sandpaper jammy team, where we leave skill players at home and take role players, in a fruitless attempt to build a team to beat Canada, because this isn't working. And this is the greatest example of it not working. And now we've gotten to the point where the team's even got multiple personality disorder. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, they scratch Dubinsky, who's only there to play Crosby, to put a guy in Palmieri because he's got 30 goals. And meanwhile, they're leaving guys like Phil Kessel and Tyler Johnson home for guys like Dubinsky. So now we're in almost total schizophrenia, too, as a program.
But surely this result will bury that approach, won't it? Like, this result plus the way the young American guys have played on Team North America and seeing the success of that team and their success in this tournament, it's pretty much black and white here, isn't it? I can't imagine you can go back and be all Brian Berkey about the next, whatever the next tournament's going to be.
I don't know. Because here's the thing about that. If this happened in Canada, if after winning silver in Vancouver, the following two tournaments were as disastrous as they were for the United States. I mean, and this is Canada we're talking about now. There'd be commissions. Mm-hmm. There'd be probably parlementary hearings.
Yes,
there'd
there
be
were.
Real pressure to completely overhaul the brain trust of this team. I don't know if the same pressures exist inside of USA Hockey, because the guys that put this team together are the guys that also run USA Hockey. Furthermore, I'm not sure if there's the depth of the bench that you'd have in Canada of executives you could turn the keys over to. I mean, I was looking at it last night as far as like NHL general managers that were USA born. The only guy I could come up with that could walk in and maybe change the conversations, Ray Shiro, and he's had some, you know, experience in the international level as well. So I hope so, but you're essentially asking, you know, Dean Lombardi, Brian Burke, and the rest of them to change their stripes, because I don't think there's going to be a sweeping overhaul of personnel at the top of this program anytime soon.
How is this loss going to be viewed in the U.S.?
Well, that kind of speaks to how the World Cup of Hockey will be viewed in the U.S. And, I mean, I've been obviously up here covering it, so I don't have a perfect scope of what this tournament looks like back home, but I kind of have an idea. And it's not necessarily on the radar anywhere near where the Olympics would be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this loss is going to get a lot of attention in the next 24 to 48 hours, and then it'll be forgotten about until news comes down as far as, you know, the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And if we go, who's going to coach the team? I think from an impact standpoint, it's an embarrassment, primarily because it's Canada, and also because all these players were so excited to get back on ESPN in the States. Literally, Ben Bishop telling me, it's great to have a channel where my family and friends know where to find me.
Mm-hmm.
And then they do this. And so from that aspect, it's a huge embarrassment. From that aspect, it's this whole tournament, boys, we talked about it before, was set up so the USA and Canada could finish with a three-game series for the championship.
Right.
The whole thing was set up that way. You play once in the prelims, so TV's happy. and then you come back and play for the championship. And the United States might not win a game in the tournament, depending if they come out against the Czechs like they did against the Finns in the bronze medal game in Sochi. It's a titanic embarrassment. I think it'll resonate with the casual fan, but it's not paramount because we've got football and baseball and the most cuckoo election in the history of American politics going on.
You know, one of the things that fascinates me about this is, you know, the approach taken by the Americans, you know, the sacrificing talent for grit. It seems to me that that is just a total misread of what Canadian hockey is all about. You know, like, this team is designed apparently to beat Team Canada. But that's a misread. I don't think you beat Team Canada with grit and determination and hard work and all that. I think you beat a skilled team by putting your most skilled players out there, especially at this stage of the, especially in training camp, basically.
I think you're right to a point, but here's and I wrote about this on Puck Daddy this morning. Here's where things went awry. If you look back at that Vancouver team that won silver, that was a team that averaged 4 goals a game, and they averaged 4 goals a game because you had guys like Kessler and Backes and others who were very viable offensive players along with being gritty sandpaper jammy guys.
Right.
But now the problem is that you have those guys on the team, plus guys like Dubinsky, plus guys like Abdelkader. And those guys, Kessler and Backes, those types aren't nearly the offensive players they used to be, but right. You still put them on the team out of loyalty.
Right.
So they look back at that Vancouver team that Brian Burke built, that had sandpaper and skill, very much like this Canadian team, by the way. As Matthew Shane pointed out, the 3 goals they scored were all dirty goals last night. But now those guys have aged out of those roles, and they've overcompensated because they think that's the way to win because they had success in Vancouver. So you're right. Essentially, it's a philosophical problem, and the problem is they look back at that Vancouver thing through clouded eyes, not realizing how much skill they actually had in the team, not realizing that the gritty guys were also skilled guys, and not realizing, of course, at the end of the day, team ain't playing for a gold medal if it ain't for Ryan Miller, you know, doing and lifting during that tournament.
Right.
If you could roll back the clock, Greg, and, you know, and kind of so recast this team in a different form, in a more kind of skilled offensive form, understanding that this tournament was going to be a little more crisp and intense than I think people thought it was going to be right off the hop, maybe understanding that, you know, Team Europe isn't going to be a joke. Again, kind of looking at what was available in terms of American hockey talent, taking away the young guys, could this have been a team? You know, could you put together an American team that would push Canada in this tournament or not?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, if you're talking about personnel, I think the middle of this lineup was problematic. And you look at a guy like Tyler Johnson, who to me excels in a tournament. Because here's the thing, for all the gritty sandpaper stuff, this is an exhibition tournament in September, and you can look around at all these games, and there's not a lot of hitting. There's not a lot of physicality. And a guy like Tyler Johnson, who can be a little water bug out there, to me, would have excelled in this tournament because of that very thing. So he's one. Obviously, leaving Kessel's goals at home is a mistake, as Phil Kessel will be the first to tell you. And then you look at a guy like Kyle Okposo, who to me is very much in the mold of what they think Backes and Kessler are right now, which is a guy who can be physical but also be an offensive force and also play in your top six, which is frankly something that Justin Abdelkader can't do, even though they cast him in that role in the tournament. But the biggest thing is not the players that the United States left home. The biggest thing is the coach they bought to Toronto. And let's dial it back on Tortorella for a second. Not only is his approach to this game archaic and ineffective, but the primary reason he was hired by Team USA was because he didn't have a National Hockey League job. Remember that? They wanted a guy who could dedicate himself to building this team, to scouting this team, and all that jive, who wasn't going to be burdened by coaching in the NHL. And then he gets hired by the Blue Jackets. So one of the primary reasons this guy is even in the job goes out the window, which makes you bang your head against the desk, because then why not just hire LaViolette? Or hire John Cooper with dual citizenship, although there's a weird thing going on there with USA Hockey and John Cooper, and I can't figure it out. But that guy to me is Babcock. That guy to me is the giant ego, or Ron Wilson for that matter, the giant ego who comes in, who swaggers and makes you feel like you can look Canada eye to eye, versus Tortorella, who comes in and is blustery and fiery, but at the end of the day, makes you feel like you're the underdog, makes you feel like you're the blue-collar guy who goes into that Canadian game hoping and praying you get a break to win.
Yeah, and Cooper also coaches like a guy in the, you know, in this decade of the 21st century, right?
That he's, that's true.
That which would help.
What could possibly – that's an interesting point, Greg, and I wasn't aware of that. What could possibly be going on between John Cooper and USA Hockey? Does it – I mean, it couldn't have anything to do with the fact he works for Steve Yzerman, who's you know, closely affiliated with Hockey Canada, could it? I mean –
No, is it again? This is just speculation.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point.
Very little information, but it's—I mean—he's not the easiest guy to work with. You know, it's
okay.
Like if you turn the keys to the team to John Cooper, then you got yourself a John Cooper team. And for all of Tortorella's failings as a coach, he's not that difficult to work with as far as working with management. So I mean, that's the only thing I've heard. But as far as why you don't bring him in, I don't know. And then, you know, if it comes also down to management, because essentially they're going to pick guys that they're loyal to. They're going to pick guys that they're comfortable with. And Cooper's not been in this cycle. I mean, Tortorella was an assistant coach in Vancouver.
Right.
And don't forget that.
Right.
These guys, it's an old boys club, and they like who they like, and that goes through the coaching ranks all the way down to recycling guys like Ryan Kessler and David Backes, probably a little bit after their expiration dates.
Looking ahead with this tournament now, Greg, now that we're past the American debacle here, but it sure looks like Canada-Sweden right now. And that could change this afternoon if the Team North America rises up and beats them. Maybe we'll have a different conversation. But right now, it's kind of that seems to be the way it's headed. And again, I have a hard time seeing anybody beating this Canadian team. But do you think, you know, are there any kind of surprises in order in the very few days actually that we have left with this tournament?
Well, yeah. I'm obviously hoping that Team North America does pull off some magic today and somehow finds a path to the semifinals. Because I think, from an excitement perspective and from an American television perspective, that might be our only hope for this to resonate back home. But that Team Europe, man, like. You know, they beat the U.S. and then we all snickered at it, but that's actually a pretty good team. And one of the most fascinating storylines of this tournament is the idea that were it not for Team Europe, all of these guys wouldn't be playing in the World Cup. I mean, it's been, you know, obviously well-established, well-reported. Kopitar, you know, Zuccarello, Vanek, none of these guys are here if it's not for Team Europe. But now you've kind of turned the dial a little bit to it being a story about how none of these guys ever win at international tournaments. Mm-hmm. And now, as Team Europe, they've got a shot. And, you know, Canada's got motivation. Sweden's got motivation. We all wondered what the hell the motivation for Team Europe would be, but they've got it. And, mm-hmm. and they've really come together, played well, and are playing a style of hockey that I think is going to end up frustrating Canada or frustrating Sweden. And they've got a legitimate shot at making the final, which would be a hell of an upset based on what the odds were for that team coming into the tournament.
Well, and especially we know that Team Europe may not exist the next time, and that would be something if your defending champions aren't invited back to the World Cup of Hockey.
I think you know, whatever they do with the World Cup next time, I think we're pretty sure there's going to be a U23 team,
right?
Just based on the jersey sales alone. But you're right. I mean, who the heck knows about Team Europe going forward? And yes, I mean, the other thing, too, the other elephant in the room is the Olympics. It's been the Olympics throughout this tournament, and that's also the big question for the U.S. I mean, it's like, you know, we could see this whole thing change in 2018 because there won't be a U23 team in South
right.
Korea, and Matthews and Eichel and all those guys could be past the torch, but that remains to be seen if there'll even be the opportunity if the NHL doesn't go.
You know, it surprised me when you think about Team Europe a little bit. The one thing I've noticed about Team Europe is they also seem to be having a great deal of fun. I mean, if you watch them during the game, there's an awful lot of interaction there. I'm wondering if maybe Ralph Kruger isn't sort of coming back into focus as a potential NHL coach as a result of this. I mean, I know he's got a lot going on. He's going to the World Economic Forum. He's probably got weightier issues on his mind, but it was interesting because I read a piece by Terry Jones in the Edmonton Sun, kind of revisiting Ralph Kruger's stint with the Oilers and just kind of reminding people that, you know what, he wasn't the most hated guy when he was the head coach there. You know, there were a lot of people liked him and a lot of people in the dressing room liked him.
Yeah, not in the least. He you could ask those guys that were on that Edmonton team, the younger players. And one of their biggest regrets was not playing well enough to keep him there. And that's not to say that they don't like McClellan and whoever's there now, but they lament the fact that they only got one season with Kruger, because he's a hell of a coach and a really good guy and a guy that you could tell they felt they could grow under, but they didn't play well enough, and the pressures of the market being what they are, he had to go. I don't know if returning to the National Hockey League's even on his plate with everything else he's got going on. But I mean, your original point's correct. Like, he's helped bring this team together in record time. Guys from all over the world, different languages, guys who never played together before. He's helped them gel, not only through his personality, but also recognizing the style of hockey they should be playing. They were doing run and gun for the first couple games. That was a disaster. And then he changed the style, and they all felt more comfortable in it. But, you know, I talked to Matt Zuccarello about that during the exhibition games, and he said, the thing about this team is that you play against these guys and you hate them. And then you come into this room and you realize they're all the best guys you've ever met. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that Marian Hossa, Kopitar, Chara, like there's a veteran leadership in that team, are all really good guys. And it's going to be really easy for a Leon Draisaitl, for example, to walk into that room, be intimidated by the idols that he sees, but then feel really comfortable really quickly because they're all real decent dudes and they're all there for the right reason. And you know, that's another lesson Team USA could take. I think you got some guys in that room that aren't exactly the same, you know, kind of character as the Europe guys are. And I think the results are clear on the ice.
Now, Greg, you mentioned, you know, the Olympics being kind of the subtext of this, part of the subtext with this tournament. There's no question about that. And, you know, at the very least, the NHL is trying to create some negotiating leverage for themselves with the IOC to try and cut a better deal. Or maybe they're quite ready to walk away, and the owners, I'm certain, are pretty happy to walk away from a tournament in Korea in the middle of the season. But what do you think's going to happen there? And if it's not an NHL tournament, what is it? You know, I can't imagine NHL teams releasing players or releasing young players or releasing guys who just want to go and play for their country to play in a tournament that's not an NHL tournament. What's that going to turn into if it's not the NHL?
Your last point's an interesting one, because I've always said that if they don't go, you're going to have European players that are going to find a way to go somehow. Either they leave their teams or they sign someplace else for a season or something. And Ovechkin kind of sounded that alarm again here at the World Cup. And I don't think he's bluffing. It means exponentially more to Russians and others to win gold than it does to win the Stanley Cup in some cases. What is it going to look like? I don't know. And I think the thing, when you look at the World Cup and the Olympics and what they're asking for, a couple of basic things. They're asking for the IOC to cover all of the insurance costs for the players. They're asking for the IOC to spend more money to accommodate the players' families. And the big thing, and as you look around every single retail store in Toronto in over the last couple of weeks, they want to be able to sell gear. They want to be able to sell Olympic-branded merchandise with NHL players' names on it. And you can see why, because they are making a mint here with World Cup of Hockey stuff. Are they going to get all that? I don't know, because the IOC had a leadership change within the last couple of years, and the NHL feels like they're back at square one. You combine that with not really giving a care about the South Korean market, and it's not, it doesn't look good. It really doesn't look good. And you know, it'll come down to whether there's a power play. They want to go to China. They want to go to Beijing. They don't want to go to South Korea. If the IOC says you can have both or you can have none of them, then it's going to really put some pressure on the NHL, because they really do want to go to Beijing. I know that for a fact.
Mr. Wyshynski, great of you to do this as always.
Thanks, boys. I'm going to go jump in a volcano now.
Take care.
Thanks, Greg.
That's Greg Wyshynski, editor of the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports.